Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yordana Ozband. Our daf of the day, Masachah Kiddushin, daf Kaf Gimel, page 23. Our daf here is pretty, I want to say, straightforward in that it's basically expanding on the different particulars of the Mishnah from yesterday's daf. And the part that interests me the most addresses this aspect of the slave. Again, we're talking about a non-Jewish slave, can go free, can leave servitude either by, you know, we saw there are several different modes that are listed, one of them being kesef, one of them being money, and again it says me'atzmo, it's a dispute whether it's of his own money or acherim, or by somebody else, and that's a question of, you know, the document versus the money. But then the Gemara there, or the Mishnah really, we talked about it in that context, was about this question of how a slave can ever own money, since anything that comes to his hand for his own ownership is immediately, simultaneously owned by the master. Like, that's what it means to be a slave, or part of what it means to be a slave. So this is exactly the citation from the Mishnah. And then the Gemara goes on, so the Gemara says, well, that means that if he's given the money, right, he's freeing himself by money that is paid by himself, that would emancipate him. But if the money is given by others, then he would not be emancipated. This was, you know, in accord with that view. But again, how can he have any money of his own? Am I? The verse is, why not? Why can't it be that he could be emancipated by acherim? Nehi nami d'shalomi da'ato. He could be freed even against his will, which is a funny kind of thing, because I guess you would think that any slave would want to be freed. But even if he doesn't, it's not really does he want to be freed or not. It's about, is he part of the transaction? Does he know that this is happening? Right? The Gemara says, well, let's say we've got a case of it going free without his own consent, because the rabbis say basically it's a benefit, right? It's always in one's interest to go free. And therefore, Vatanina, that we learned in a brayta, Zachin Ladam Shelo B'fanav, we can benefit a person in their absence. We've talked about this in the past. I'm sure we'll talk about it again. It's a really important general principle, right? That you could do something on behalf of somebody else when they're not present and they don't know about it, because it's, or when it is for their benefit. So you might not be able to sell somebody into slavery without their acquiescence, but you can free them from slavery because that's obviously for their own good. You can only act against a person's interest when he's there. We still haven't addressed this question of how he has any money, right, to be able to pay. My al yaday atzmo. What does it mean that he's giving money of himself or by himself? Af al yaday atzmo. So this means even if the money, right, is given to himself, right, it's given, presumably this is going to be on behalf of his freedom, right? Let me say this more carefully. My al yaday atzmo. What does it mean when we say that he's given money by himself or of himself? Af al yaday atzmo. Al yaday atzmo, meaning, I just want to be careful with the prepositions here. Al yaday, meaning by virtue of, or it's again, or through. V'kamashmana, therefore we learn the yesh kinyan le'evid below rabo. And therefore we learn that the evid, the slave, in fact can make a kinyan. He can come to acquire something without the master being there. Right? And now, what does it mean that he can acquire something? Does that mean that he's acquiring it for himself? Or does it mean that the act of acquisition works for him to acquire something that fundamentally is then owned by the master? So then, rather, what we should say is at the end of that Mishnah, when it says that he could be freed with a shtar, if that's accepted by others, right, as opposed to then the shtar, the document, is not accepted by himself. But one second, can't we just say, and we've said this with divorce for a woman, we could say that gito, the get shichror, the document of freedom, of manumission, and his hand, meaning the hand through which he acquires this item, should come ba'in kachad. They come simultaneously at the exact moment that he's given the bill that frees him. He can also then has a hand, so to speak, by which to accept it. So I kind of always love this simultaneity, that it has to work that way, because otherwise the logic is impossible. But the question then is, why wouldn't you say that then about the money, right? Like, if he is going, well, I take that back. I've answered my own question in my head. Namely, if somebody comes and gives him money by which he's supposed to then free himself, maybe he can acquire it to then hand it off to the master, but he's not free yet at that moment that he's given the coins, let's say, or the bills. I mean, money bills, right? Because he first has to then pay the master, and then he's free. Okay, and then just lastly here, v'chitema mai al yedei acherim. What does it mean to say that it would be accepted by others? Meaning, how can it be that he would not be freed if he accepts that shtar, shehor, that bill of manumission by himself? Then theoretically, he could also be freed if somebody else accepted it. Like, why does it have to be in his own hand? Af al yedei acherim. So this is the claim, right? That from that Mishnah, that it's the benefit. It's to the benefit of the slave who goes out from under his master's hand for his own freedom. He's leaving the master's authority for his own freedom. So if that's the case, meaning that there's no real difference then whether you're getting freed by virtue of money or by virtue of a document. If it's acherim, meaning if it's given to another party, you don't even have to worry about about simultaneity. You just know that the other people are going to hand it off, right? And then he'll be freed. And therefore it says, let us combine them, naravinhu v'nidninhu, and we can learn them or teach them together, namely, b'kesef uvishtar. Let's teach kesef uvishtar together, because they fundamentally function in the same way at the time that you're coming to free the slave. Bein al yedei acherim, bein al yedei atzmo. So you should say, either way, they're going to be the same thing. And of course, then the Gemara is going to go on to say, no, there's a real difference between when we have money or we have a bill of manumission, because that's exactly the question, right? To what extent can it ever be done fully on his own? Yerdana, over to you.
Yeah, I mean, so it's sort of like, I don't know, are they setting an expectation that the slave can never fulfill?
Oh, that's interesting. I think he can fulfill it. I mean, I think there's a recognition that I think that there's a real machloket in the Mishnah, right? Whether the thing that he's allowed to do on his own is the document because it's simultaneous, or he gets the money and then he can, if somebody gives him the money to give to the master, then he's allowed to free himself with that. That's the machloket, right?
Right. Which one? I don't know. I just feel like it seems like a very high standard, but I'm going to go through a little bit of this also at the end on Amud Bet. So the last statement of the Mishnah says, "Bulvachei kesef mishal acherim." Right. The Chachamim say that a slave can redeem himself with money as long as that money belonged originally to other people. And this, you know, is in contrast to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, which is, you know, the first opinion cited in the Mishnah, that a slave can't, you know, actually redeem himself with money. So the Gemara wants to understand what is this machlokas actually about. Name a baha kamaflige, right? What is the machlokas about? To Rabbi Meir Savar in Kenyan le'evid below Rabbo, but in Kenyan le'isha below Ba'ala. So Rabbi Meir holds that a slave has no power to acquire anything without his master. Okay, so in other words, everyone agrees that when a slave acquires something, it belongs to his master. But Rabbi Meir holds even sort of like a higher level, that even if somebody gives something to a slave and says, you know, as a gift, right, that it belongs, you know, even if they intended it to belong to the slave, it still is going to belong to the master, okay? So when you talk about money, right, if you have money, right, the Chachamim could say that it could belong to others, right? Others gave the slave basically a gift of money and he could redeem him, right? And he would, but according to Rabbi Meir, he couldn't redeem himself with that because it actually just belongs to his master. And he has the same concept also for a wife in Kinyan Leisha Belo Baala, right? That whenever a wife receives a gift, it belongs to her husband, basically. The Rabbanan Savri Yesh Kinyan Le'Evid Belo Rabo, V'Yesh Kinyan Leisha Belo Baala. Whereas the rabbis hold that a slave and a woman, a wife, excuse me, can have acquisition that is not tied to the relationship of owner or to husband. So the Gemara is going to, you know, says, okay, this initial explanation that they give, they're not sure that they could actually say this is what it is about. I'm a rabbi, I'm a Rav Sheshet. Rabbi says in the name of Rav Sheshet, Zuhule Amma Inkin and Le'evit below Rabbo. No, he says everyone agrees, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, that a slave has no power of acquisition, not through his master, okay? So in other words, there's no idea that like a gift could be given to a slave that doesn't automatically belong to the owner. Vein kinyan leisha b'lo ba'ala. And the same thing with a woman, right? That she doesn't have any type of power of acquisition, right? That's independent of her husband if a gift was given to her. V'hacha b'mayaskinen z'aknei le'achar mana. So rather, with what case are we talking about in the Mishnah, right? It's a case where someone gave a manat to the slave, but amar le al manat she'en l'rabich reshupo. And he says, this gift is on the condition that your owner has no rights to it. Rabbi Meir sabar ki amar le kane. Rabbi Meir holds that when the donor says to the slave, acquire the gift, kani eved v'kani rabbi. The slave acquires it, but the master does too. In other words, that condition can't be a condition that exists, because automatically the owner is going to acquire it. And if the donor says to the slave, it's on the condition, right? It has no effect. It doesn't mean anything. The Rabbanan Sfira came into Amarle Amanat Ahani Le Tane, right? But the Chachamim hold that when the donor says to the slave, on the condition can be effective. And so that's, you know, what that's really what the Machlokas is about. It's that, can you give a gift with a condition saying that the owner doesn't own it? Rabbi Meir says no. Anything a slave owns, his master automatically owns. And the Chachamim say yes. So again, I go back to Anne, what we said before. You know, I think this is why, like, Rabbi Meir holds a very high opinion, or it's sort of a extreme opinion of how a slave could eventually get redeemed. Now they're going to give us another understanding of what this machlok is about. Rabbi Eliezer Amar, Kol Hi Kai Gavna. In any case, right, where the donor says that the owner has no rights to this gift, to this money, to kule amiglo pliga dekani eved vekani rabbi. Everyone, both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, agree that the slave does acquire it and the master also acquires it. So he's changing what said. Before we said that the Chachamim would hold that the owner in that case would not acquire it. Rabbi Eliezer is saying no, everyone agrees that the owner automatically acquires it. Here we're dealing with a case in the Mishnah in which somebody gave a manat to the slave. And he says, this is a gift to you specifically so that you can go free with it. It's money for you to redeem yourself. So Rabbi Meir still holds that when the donor says this to the slave, basically acquire the gift, kani eved v'kani rabbi. Doesn't make a difference what your intention for the gift was, donor. The owner still acquires it. The chi amarle almanas lo klum kamarle, right? And so when he says almanas, it doesn't mean anything. It has no effect. He can't give any money to the slave with the condition. But the rabbis hold that even the slave, right, himself, the donor, is not actually giving a gift. Rather, he's just giving it to him, so on condition that he actually goes free. Now, the Gemara will continue with this again tomorrow. But, Anne, I think this, like, passage really shows us, like, that's really what the issue is. Is there a way where we can allow a slave to actually acquire their own money?
I think that's a good question.
Okay. Way to do that. Right. So how does that actually
work? Right, but we still have to, like,
tune and see tomorrow.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's our top discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thanks to Reverend Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.